It's called protein degradation. And if you're a bad protein in a cancer cell, you'd better get your affairs in order. Because now, thanks to Dana-Farber's foundational work, protein degradation can target cancer-causing proteins and destroy them, right inside the cell. This take-no-prisoners approach is making a difference in multiple myeloma and other blood cancers, and is how Dana-Farber is working to treat previously untreatable cancers. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
What the White House would like to do about power plants and climate change.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. Now, in the coming days, the Obama administration is expected to lay out its plan to cut carbon dioxide emissions in a bid to slow climate change. The idea would give some 600 coal-fired electric plants some options. Let's bring in Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein. Dan, what are we expecting here?
Well, in essence, the Environmental Protection Agency will ask states and the power plants in those states to reduce carbon emission rates by a certain amount. We don't yet know how much. The federal government estimates the plants are responsible for about a third of U.S. greenhouse emissions. To cut pollution, states will have options. They can have cap and trade systems that allow polluters to buy emission credits. They can also encourage more renewable energy projects or reduce overall power use. All of those actions would count towards the new goal because what's going to be measured is the total tonnage of greenhouse gases from a state.
All right, so operative word options, but it's clear details are not finalized. How's this, what do you want to call it, soft launch being received?
Well, put it this way. The term cap and trade is seen as so controversial, you might hear the White House talk about budget programs instead. So yeah, the coal industry, business groups, and politicians are watching this closely and primed to pounce. That said, though, David, there are several countries around the world who are also monitoring this closely, including China, where some believe if the United States gets more serious about capping its emissions, China, the world's largest greenhouse gas polluter, may follow suit. We're talking high stakes, and it's safe to expect this is going to find its way to court.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you.
Thank you.
Now, the official start of the hurricane season is June 1, less than a week away. While storms like Hurricane Sandy are still unusual, protecting densely populated coastal areas is a technological challenge. New York City comes to mind. Conrad Wilson reports.
Here's the main problem.
In the last 150 years, sea level has risen about 45 centimeters in New York.
Portland State University's Stefan Talca says that may not sound like much, but the result is any storm that hits today is nearly a foot and a half higher than it was during the mid-1800s. One short-term solution is to move sensitive tech equipment and electrical boxes out of basements, or build houses several feet off the ground. Another technology that might help is a deployable flood barrier. Philip Orton, a professor at the Stevens Institute of Technology, says it's a temporary structure built to help protect the city.
It just gets deployed when there's a storm coming. It's unpopular to some people because there can be human error if it's not deployed correctly.
According to one study, using just barriers in New York is too expensive. It would only be cost-effective under the worst weather scenarios. I'm Conrad Wilson for Marketplace.
Now let's check numbers. London's 100 share index, some call it the FTSE, is up less than 0.5% now. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are up. Where's that 10-year Treasury yield coming out of the long weekend? 2.53%. Research shows that venture capital tends to flow to people who look like the venture capitalists, often leaving out women and minority innovators. Jules Pierre, founder and CEO of the product launch platform called The Grommet, has experienced this issue firsthand and has a very specific, even practical idea she thinks can help close the gap. Jules, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, David.
So innovation requires brains, but also requires money, and the early money often comes from venture capitalists. But you see a bias?
Well, I don't just see it. I know it because only 4% of venture capital goes to women. 96% goes to men.
Now, that is going to be unfair to women entrepreneurs, but you think that actually hurts the country?
Deeply, yes, because when you think of all the big issues of our time in terms of environmental issues, of wealth distribution. Everything starts with a company's formation. So therefore, if we want that access to opportunity and to shape the world the way we want it to be, you have to open it up to everybody who has ideas to do so. And a lot of ventures, the more high-profile, high-growth ones, do require capital, in particular venture capital.
So it sounds like a complex problem, but you have what you see as a simple solution. That's a rarity.
Yeah, I have come up with a solution. I call it Title IX for Business. Venture capitalists actually get a really special tax break on their personal income. They pay basically capital gains rates on their personal income. So what if we said, hey, if you want the tax break, we're going to actually pay attention to whom you invest in. And let's measure that against the people who are actually looking to start ventures, including women and minorities.
So simple in its conception, probably not all that simple to pass into law, right?
Well, how boring is this? Federal tax code, right? I think you do have to make it more fundamental. Anybody who has a daughter, sister, friend who's a woman would relate to the idea that that's not fair. And we have the precedent of Title IX when it comes to sports being a resounding success. It was equally controversial. And it worked. The immediate effects of women applying to graduate school and changing their outlook on what they could achieve in life was astounding.
Jules Pierre, founder CEO of The Grommet. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And for the first time, the typical CEO salary in the U.S. has eight figures to the left of the decimal. The Associated Press just crunched the numbers, propelled by profits and last year's rising stock market. The median pay for company bosses surpassed $10 million. That's up nearly 9% from the year before. The typical chief executive now makes 257 times the average worker's salary. It was 42 to 1 in 1980. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.